Hello, meine Lieblings, and welcome to another thrilling instalment of Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I am Paul McInnes, and on today's show, we will provide for your delectation the following. One serving of verbally dexterous Brit hop star Suede Asafo. Three American standard cups of new music from Dinosaur Pilop, Amazing Baby, and Eagles of Death Metal. Is that the craziest lineup of band names yet? I think it is. We'll take a dose of your face back twice daily. And Rosie Swash will be telling us all about her love for UNPOC. But first, ethereal, angelic, or just plain high. However you describe his voice, there's only one Anthony Hegarty. That was the sound of Anthony and the Johnsons and You Are My Sister from their Mercury Prize-winning album I Am A Bird Now, which is a great title, if a little offensive to women. Speaking of whom, here's my partner in pod, Miss Rosie Swash, who's wincing, and I'm presuming that's because I just belted that into the microphone and almost burst your drums. How are you, Rosie?
What? Yeah, I'm fine. How are you?
I'm very well. So tell us about Anthony Hegarty then. You met him last week, was it?
I did, yes. His new album, The Crying Light, which is out in January, is his first since the big Mercury win, which is when everyone heard about him. It's been floating around the scenes. Hercules and the Love Affair was pretty huge. He did a collaboration with Bjork, and he also had an EP out called Another World.
He has been making a lot of music, as you say, and it's all been kind of dabbling in different side projects and slightly off centre from what he was doing previously. Does that mean we can expect real differences in his new material from what he released previously?
Well, he did a couple of shows at the Barbican earlier this month, which got 5-star reviews and everyone loved them, which the feedback has been. It's not different musically, but the big thing with I'm a Bird Now was the concept and the themes of transgender and identity confusion. But with The Crying Light, he seems to have dropped all that in favour of a newfound appreciation for Mother Nature and the Earth.
This group of songs a lot revolving around imagery of nature and the elements and my relationship to the natural world, and songs about my relationship to my mother and my father, and by extension, sort of the earth is my mother in a way. The music's quite pastoral. It's quite kind of like a series of landscapes.
I can't tell you what that made me think of when you said it was Bjork and her soundscapes and the visual imagery she uses. And of course, you just worked with her recently. I wondered what the influence was, the new influence for you, why this is a new idea.
Well, it's songs I've written in the last 7 years.
Right.
And it's really been one of my primary concerns in my adult life, especially since college and since I learned in college about ecology and the changing climate. I've been more and more concerned with it. But then also, as I've gotten older, as a transgender person and more confident in my thinking independently, you know, as a kid I was raised Catholic, you know, when they teach you that no other animals have souls, no trees have souls, rocks don't, the earth doesn't, you know, and then when you die you go to heaven and it's just this weird white expanse where nothing's born and nothing dies, and it's quite a frightening idea. And I think it made me feel quite lonely in my earliest perception of the world, trying to see things through the lens of those ideas was very alienating. I've moved towards something much more feminine in my approach to my embracing of my environment. You know, I feel very much like I was like quite literally born from this world and made of the same water and the same elements and same carbon. I know it just seems like common sense, but believe me, to me it was quite a revelation to realise I was made of the same stuff as everything around me. We're nothing but children of our environment, you know? There's just all these abstract ideas about how God loves you, the sky God loves you from the sky, but there's a lot of very tangible ways that our environment loves us every single day, from the gentleness of the sunshine to the water that she gives us to drink and the food she gives us to eat and, you know, the oxygen that she brings into our, you know, it's almost like we're fetuses in her womb, in a way, just walking around, even in the streets of London. She holds us. Do you think that sounds crazy?
I need another world. A place where I can go. I'm gonna miss the sea. gonna miss the snow.
You mentioned home, you mentioned America. Do you still live in New York?
Yeah, I love it because there's people there from everywhere. So there's no underlying sense of, well, we were here first. You know, so everyone sort of knows their place. And I like an immigrant city where everyone realizes they come from somewhere else. And finding out what they have in common with radical diversity, you know?
You talked very lovingly about this when you arrived, and I wondered how you felt it had changed, if you felt it had changed.
Well, that's the thing about New York, is that the culture, it's quite brutal. It's a city that has really very little respect for the past or the future. It knocks itself down every 10 years and builds itself again. I was watching this documentary about New York, and it was people from the end of the 19th century, late 1800s, complaining that you could go back to the neighborhood you were born in 30 years later and you wouldn't recognize a single shop. And I was quite surprised and relieved to realize that New Yorkers have always complained that the city changes so fast. Yeah. And that's the nature of the city. But that's also makes it what's so wonderful. It just knocks itself down and new people arrive and they dream up something new.
You talk about the clubs that you went to when you arrived in New York. You kind of revisited that with Hercules and Love Affair and also My Robot Friend, the track you did with them, which is absolutely excellent.
How could you say that?
I love that, so well, you don't like it?
No, I mean, you know, I was, as I said, just doing my best Alison Moyet impersonation. I mean, you know, it's all just a huge homage to her brilliance. If you want to give it one more try, I will always answer when you call. I'll never learn to say goodbye at all, at all, at all.
Still a good song.
Oh, I prefer Hercules, but I do love it.
But were you, is that you kind of revisiting that era, or is it?
To be honest, when I was working in clubs, it was all hard techno. It was very apocalyptic. You know, when I was in the clubs, it was like SPK meets like Billie Holiday. We were playing all the Savoy records from Manchester, and it was quite hardcore. The things that we were listening to were a bit bruised. But then if you went to the big clubs, it was all hardcore techno and some house. So it was a different flavor, you know, because Andy's more reminiscing on a sort of 80s, 70s, 80s thing.
I wanted to just go back to when you were talking earlier about your place in the world and how you feel, and you mentioned the transgender aspect of it. And I wanted to know how you feel about pop stars like Katy Perry, you know, and her song I Kissed a Girl, and the kind of faux lesbianism that's used to sell records, and this kind of like, oh, isn't it so sensational? And isn't it so risque? I mean, it makes me want to puke, but...
Yeah, well, you know, that's always been something that's been peddled. It really gets the guys going, doesn't it? You know, they love that. I can't say, you know, I don't have a proper opinion about that. You know, honestly, it's just titillation, you know, and it's not... And I wonder who it really benefits. You know, this is quite a misogynist culture and you know... A lot of young, especially young women pop singers, are often seen to me to be quite sexually exploited in, you know, by the media and by their management. And
make you want to turn away from it.
Well, I just worry about those girls. You know, they have a right to their innocence. We all do. You know, we have a right to feel treasured and not to be exploited. I mean, I remember when Christina Aguilera was like 17 and she was being put in these like meat rack environments for music videos, and I'm sure she felt on some way level empowered by it. But there's always this feeling of who's writing the terms, you know? It's like, you want to exploit me, I'll exploit myself. But there's always a sort of sadness to that.
That's Anthony Hegarty, and The Crying Light, the new album from Anthony and the Johnsons, is released in January. You can still pick up the Another World EP from Rough Trade.
Thanks, Rosie. Now, from Another World to World of Han. Yes, it's time for Singles Club, and joining us is the editor of The Guardian's film and music supplement, Mr. Michael Han. Hey, Michael, what's squonking?
I have no idea how to respond to that, Paul. I'm genuinely lost for words. If you'd warned me, I'd have thought up some grumpy response, but I don't have one now.
I thought that was just you came natural. Grump was what you're always.
It's not grumpiness so much. I've been discussing this with my wife a lot recently. I think as I get older, it's not that I'm getting grumpier. I'm getting shallower. You know, for years, I used to really hate when you see write-ups of Saturday evening TV programmes, they'd say, and such attractive young actor, actress has been cast for the dads. I think that's disgraceful. Now I will not sit down and watch Saturday evening telly with my kids unless there's someone been put in the cast for the dads.
For the dads, yeah,
frankly.
So do you watch The X Factor?
I do watch The X Factor.
Who's for the dads on The X Factor?
Well, actually, I feel a bit uneasy getting to talking about X Factor contestants for the dads. I think they're for
so
a,
young.
Yeah. I'd really rather not go there, Paul.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I was hoping...
If you want to talk about Strictly, I'm happy to go there.
No, I was going to compare notes on Alexandra, but there we go. Right. We'll go straight into your choice this week for Singles Club, which is, I believe, My Rock and Roll by Dinosaur Pylop.
Since I was young, I've always felt some sort of tremble. The nervous woman's finger on my lips. That's my poor mother, she always knew something was going on with the sun. I guess it shows that some things are clearer than others. My rock and roll's been causing chaos.
That was Dinosaur Pylop with My Rock and Roll. Inspired by the first motorway crash involving a stegosaurus, Dinosaur Pylop hail from Leeds. Led on guitar and vocals by Matt Bigland, once a member of Mother Vulpine, you remember them, of course, he is joined now by Tom Domford and Steve Wilson in a tight three-piece, like fellow prehistoriophiliac band Dinosaur Jr. Other bands with dinosaur names include the Archie Brontosaurus outfit, Triceratoploader, and that bloke... who produced MIA's album, Diplodocus.
I've got to go now. I've got a day job to do.
Well, you've got to do, you've got another 30 seconds of telling us why you like this track, then you're free to go.
Well, grunge is evidently back, isn't it? Apparently, there is a burgeoning grunge scene around West Yorkshire. This is what my grunge contacts tell me.
Oh, really?
I am, of course, the grunge investigative correspondent of The Guardian. But I think there's something really fantastic about it. It's very it actually sounds fresh. In a way that grunge hasn't for a long time. That sounds ridiculous, I know, but bear with me. Because grunge, it became so much of a template so quickly, it became so leaden, so plodding, the lightness of touch was dropped fairly early on. But there's a kind of, I think there's a real nice swing and swagger about this record. It's melodious enough, but still powerful enough to, I think, appeal on more or less any level to people who like loud, tuneful rock music. And I know loud, tuneful rock music is quite a broad church, but I place myself within that.
Rosie Swash.
Yes.
You're agnostic on this front, aren't you?
Well, the thing is, weirdly, I have heard of Mother Vulpine.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
High five.
She has.
Because they were on a compilation by Dance to the Radio, which is that Leeds-based indie label who are really great. Really, really, really love the stuff that they do there. And Mother Vulpine were kind of cribsy, kind of snarling, angry guitars kind of thing.
And if you skip to Love is a Boat and We're Sinking, on the another tune that she's on the B-side or whatever,
yes,
that's very cribsy.
Exactly. So listening to this, how would I possibly have known that they were the same? It's so different. I like his voice. It brings a kind of a lightness to it, which grunge always needed. But I think it could do with a real slap of good production and mastering. Maybe this is just a demo. Maybe this they don't have a lot of money.
I think
it could bring out some of the texture in it.
I will confess to not being an expert in Dinosaur Pylop. This is one. I was out in the car with the family the other day, and we were doing our jukebox jewelry, working my way through the pile of CDs I brought out with me. Sadly, we do have to go out for 350-mile drives every Saturday and every Sunday, so I can work my way through the CDs in the car. And this was the winner on Sunday afternoon jukebox jewelry in the car.
Across the family.
Across the family. I think it might be their first single, and it's on a little label, so I think we can forgive them.
Very good, very good. I thought you might like the 10-minute-long incantation of rock and roll at the end. It's like some kind of mental indoctrination. But anyway, that is My Rock and Roll by Dinosaur Pylop, and it's available on Friends Versus Records from December the 8th. It's only the media class who have access to it now.
I'm telling you, that record is Canned Panther. It's that sharp.
Next up is Eagles of Death Metal and Wanna Be in L.A.
I came to L.A. to make rock and roll.
That's Wanna Be in LA by Eagles of Death Metal. Inspired by the first Bird of Prey to create its own musical subgenre, Eagles of Death Metal hail from Palm Desert, California. Comprised of Jesse Hughes and Queens of the Stone Age main man Josh Homme, they make music that Homme describes as bluegrass slide guitar mixed with stripper drum beat and canned heat vocals. Axl Rose described it slightly differently. He kicked the band off last year's Guns N' Roses tour, christening them the Eagles of Shit Metal in the process. This is my choice. I obviously don't think it's shit metal. I don't really think it's metal. I think it's soft and gentle and understated, and I like it for that. I also think it's all done with an arched eyebrow. So you've got this feeling that they could burst out into big, heavy Queens riffs at any moment, but they choose not to. And it could actually be not so much the Eagles of Death Metal, but the Eagles in places. So I really like it. But then again, I like Ocean's 12, and I feel there's a similarity between the two of them. Rosie.
I agree with you. There you go.
That's always first
the first
on the
for everything. I really like it. I love the noodling, groovy riff. And, you know, it's you do expect from the name that you're about to hear something that's a cross between Van Halen and Guns N' Roses, something like that. And it's nothing like that. It's great. And who cares what Axl Rose says anyway? He's an absolute
beep. Squonk.
Squonk.
Michael.
They're miles better than Queens of the Stone Age, aren't they? I know it's an unfashionable view, but I find Eagles of Death Metal much, 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 much more fun. Josh Homme seems to have forgotten how to write tunes for Queens of the Stone Age. But I don't know if it's him or Jesse Hughes with his big moustache who writes the tunes for Eagles of Death Metal. But they're better. It's the same song, more or less, every time. I mean, this sounds almost exactly like their first single, what, about 3-4 years ago, I Only Want You. But that was terrific fun. This is terrific fun. Great stuff.
Simply done. Well put. It's jewellery style.
If they were a big cat in a can, though, Paul,
what kind of meat would they be?
Which kind of big cat canned would they
I
be?
I think you are undermining a potentially significant development later in the pod. That's what I think you're doing. Anyway, Wanna Be in LA by Eagles of Death Metal is available now. The final track on Singles Club this week is Pump Your Brakes by Amazing Baby. That was Amazing Baby with Pump Your Brakes. Inspired by a toddler who was fluent in three languages, Amazing Baby are from Brooklyn. And that's New York, people. Amazing Baby are Will Roan and Simon O'Connor, and they went to the same university, Wesleyan, as fellow Brooklynite MGMT, Chairlift and Boy Crisis. I love that name. But, you know, I bet Wesleyan college parties, crazy, man, I can imagine, until they got broken up by that pesky dean. Amazing Baby only formed this year and are already being tipped for world domination. Not because of their music, you understand, but because they are about to unleash an airborne flesh-eating virus upon the entire planet. Rosie.
Yeah, this is my selection.
You like Amazing Baby.
Well, it's funny that we should talk about Queens of the Stone Age, because that to me sounds like early Queens of the Stone Age. It's got that kind of chugging stoner rock thing. Like MGMT, every song of theirs seems to come from a completely different pot of influences. And I'd say, broadly speaking of that EP, they've got this kind of very American LA 70s Asylum Records thing going on. They're touched by all those influences. I didn't actually see them, even though I've seen MGMT a few times. I managed to miss their support slots with the band. But I heard about them through all sorts of people. Have you seen them? They're really great. I think they're just incredibly similar to MGMT in the fact that everything sounds so different, but it's all got this specific era of influences. And yeah, so I think, you know.
This tune. Is this particularly representative of them?
Well,
bearing in mind the fact that they
it is. This is their big.
Because I have to say, I find this dull, 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 and once again dull. It sounds like suede.
It sounds like a really bad heavy metal band covering Pulp.
Well,
it really does.
It doesn't, in that
really
in
does.
That section there, I did think, oh, that sounds really dreadful. But when you listen to the whole thing,
the good bits.
As a part of the EP, properly. You know, properly rather on your iTunes. As
you see,
I'm
with Paul. I thought that's pretty rubbish.
We all stand and fall on our individual track choices, people.
And so rubbish did I think it would be that I travelled back in time to last week.
Did you?
to the Amazing Baby gig at the Lexington in London and forced myself to leave early.
You turned up to watch the support act at an Amazing Baby concert.
Yes, I did.
That's pretty obscure, that, man.
You see, Rosie says she's on the new thing. I'm on the newer thing.
You're on the new
thing.
Who
are they?
They were called Mercy Arms. But when I turned up to the gig, I couldn't remember who they were called, so I had to say to the person on the door, I'm on the guest list for the first band. Who are they? I don't know. I can't remember, but they're the first band.
That didn't
look wildly professional, I think.
Well, people, if you want to know more about Amazing Baby, and let's face it, who doesn't? You can download their Invisible Fucking Cross EP now. And right, we want your reviews of this week's track, please. Dinosaur Pileup, Eagles of Death Metal, and Amazing Baby. You can post them on our blog at guardian.co.uk/music/music blog, or send us a message on the old Facebook. We're Guardian Unlimited Music. You can find us. You can also become a fan of Music Weekly with our Music Weekly fan page. Tell us what you think of them tracks, what you just then heard them, and those other tracks that are out to buy next week.
He holds up paperwork, sign the line.
The streets, heaven for the weather.
It sounds all hectic, you're having cold feet, things are out of hand, you make embarrassed retreat. Let's ride the Valkyrie, commit a bit of sin, turn rock to rubble, punch it in the chin.
The shortwave said, glitches and bugs. Oasis, I'm out of time. Wiley, featuring Daniel Merriweather, Cash in My Pocket.
Still laughing, because I know I'm not a half heart. When we release, we don't want a half jar. The IQ's high, some of them are half smart, but I do it like Johnson, hard things drop.
There's your montage. Well, it's been Bob Harris there for you. And that's it for this week's Singles Club. But you can get it in your actual printed words every Wednesday on guardian.co.uk/music. Thank you very much to Michael Hamm for joining us today. Thank you, Mariel.
Thank you, Paul McInnes. Thank you, Rosie Swash. You've enlightened me in many, many ways.
You've enlightened us with Misery Arms or whatever it was called.
Mercy Arms.
Mercy Arms, yeah.
Misery Feet.
Misery Feet, Mercy Arms, Amazing Baby. Together.
And Lugubrious Buttocks.
Wow. How's the Guardian First Album Award coming on?
Guardian First Album Award will be... we won't be announcing it for a while yet, but voting closes literally very soon. literally the end of November. We've seen your votes. I haven't yet polled the critics. We will be doing that in the near future, and we will have a winner.
Fantastic. Is it going to get coverage on the Hits channel or anything like that?
I think there'll probably be some 4-hour TV exclusive thing. We're looking at some kind of big deal across all the networks. Barack Obama style, just buying up the airtime.
That is absolutely beautiful.
And then we'll present some band with a pack of fun-sized Mars bars, say, that's your lot. Now get out of here and don't make another record.
Yes, exactly. Thank you very much, Michael. Goodbye. Right, next up, it's Sway.
What? Nah, babes, am I wrong? Am I gonna have it though? Babes, am I done? I'ma get wicked if you don't get rid of your diligence. Stop sending your kisses on Facebook.com. Why is he ringing your phone?
I don't know.
What does he want from you?
I don't know.
Don't he know that you're not alone?
I don't know.
Swear my man's onto
you.
He's just
my ex.
F your ex.
He's just my ex.
F your ex.
He's just my ex.
F your ex.
That there is Sway with F your ex. I think we all know what he means there, though. Now, Sway was the big name in UK rap just a few years ago after winning Best Hip Hop Act at the 2005 Mobos. He went on to get a Mercury nomination the following year and then decided he was going to crack America. Now he's back and he's chatting with Rosie Swash, so he must really have made it. Rosie, what has Sway got to say for himself?
Well, famously rapped with the Kaiser Chiefs on their song Half the Truth, some collaboration work with Mark Ronson. And he also, the big news was that he signed to for the American part of his deal on Akon's label Convict Music, which is quite a shrewd move for someone I think wants to break out from the, I had an album that everyone thinks I'm like the intelligent, witty British rapper, I want to make loads of money and be really big. And he's quite frank about that in the interview.
Well, that's interesting. And not alone in doing that. I mean, we were just listening to Wiley there, who's got the Mark Ronson on board. Kano's album was a bit more commercial this time. And obviously Dizzy Rascal got a lot of stick for his Calvin Harris collaboration and also sold loads and loads of copies at the same time.
Well, you know, he's quite frank about what he wants to be big, and he thinks that his, you know, spreading his word of his gospel is very important, which is why he signed with Akon, who, and also because Akon is African and so is he, and he thinks that's important too. But the new album's called The Signature. It's got some really great tracks on there, and but I wanted to get an idea of him, why this as opposed to the first one was his signature LP.
I wanted this to be the signature rap album of the UK. You know what I mean? I wanted it to be the level that I thought all rappers within the UK should be aiming for or above. You know what I mean? I wanted it to prove to be a benchmark in UK hip hop, and that's why, you know, I didn't take no shorts on the whole production level of it. I got the 22-piece orchestra on there. You know what I mean? I've got 34 musicians in total on the album. Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of work has gone into the album. Like, I spoke to Kanye about doing something on the album. I spoke to Pharrell about doing something on the album. I spoke to Mark Ronson about doing something on the album. And we, every single time we linked up, Mark was like, give me a call, Sway, I'm going to... Phone Mark, where are you? I'm in Dubai, I'll be back next week. Where are you now? I'm in New York, I'll be back next week. Oh, Sway, sorry, I'm in Miami, I'll be back next week. So after a while, it was just kind of like, stop phoning Mark Ronson now, you know what I mean? Just get on with your album. Funny enough, me looking for Mark Ronson is the reason why I ended up on the new Kaiser Chiefs album. You know what I mean? Because I was in the studio working on the signature LP, and I heard that Mark Ronson was in the studio opposite working on something different. So I walked in, and there's a rock band in there, and they were like, would he mind coming in and just, you know, just vibing on one of our tracks? And I was with a girl that day, and I impressed her. You know what I mean?
So it's really the important thing.
They smashed it for me.
Finally, so it wasn't really him that...
No, it wasn't.
Because that's how it played out in the press.
No, Mark Ronson didn't put it together. It was actually the Kaiser Chiefs.
I won't lie, so baby don't cry. The way I'm feeling right now, I'm feeling so high. I can't tell you the truth, baby, you know why. Because everybody talks about me, I'm a known guy. I'll tell you half the truth, at least I told you half. But I know the rest of it, I'll tell you if you only ask. Because I'm a go-getter, and I should know better.
During the election, Jeremy Paxman interviewed Dizzy. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I saw it.
There was quite a lot of reaction to it. And then the follow-up was people felt that there was something patronising about Jeremy Paxman's line of questioning.
Okay.
One thing that he said, which kind of struck me, although in the context of which he said it, it must be added, isn't quite as bad as asking Dizzy if he felt British.
Uh-huh.
Now, obviously, your instant reaction to asking a black person that is like, why would you? But what made, when I thought about that, I remember, you know, when you first, all the press shots of you when you first arrived, you would wear a British flag around your face.
Yep.
What's your attitude to the being British, the question that hangs over second generation?
I don't really think the questions that Jeremy Paxman was throwing at him were curveball questions. At the end of the day, when you're on something that major, on that level, you know, everybody knows that news is like that. So I don't think if the question was posed to me, do you feel as though you're British? Just answer the question. A lot of black people in the country, they're not first generation British. So some people don't feel fully, you know, even though they're born in England, some people don't feel like they can call themselves a typical British person. So I don't think that question is a horrible question.
You don't find it offensive?
I don't find it offensive, and I don't find it patronising whatsoever.
While we're on the subject of heritage, I noticed that you are playing in Ghana soon.
Yeah.
Is that something you do a lot?
A lot. I was born and raised in London, but both my parents are from Ghana. So it's like I've kind of grew up in Ghana in the sense that I'd come from school and go, the minute I open those doors and go to my house, I'm actually in Ghana. Because my parents speak the language around me, the food's there, my culture was preserved. So I got the best of both worlds. I've got a house in Ghana now. Yeah, I mean, me and my mum built...
Oh, you have?
Yeah, me and my mum built a house together. We've got 8 bedrooms. It's huge, like, it's beautiful. Thank you to all the people who bought this in my demo. You know what I mean? Like, it's a nice life to live out there. It's relaxing. People are starting to know who I am quite a lot. I get stopped at airports, I get stopped on the street, just for the sheer fact that I've preserved my culture within, you know, my UK market as well. I let everybody know I'm Ghanaian. I done a song called Black Stars, which was representing all of the successful Ghanaians within Britain. And it became like the national anthem of the African Nations Cup.
Sweet. I'm from a place where the capital is Accra, and in the middle of the flag we have a black star. GH, nah, this ain't about race, this is more about racing. I spin off in that black car. Can't see him in Britain, he's too...
can't see in this tinted this who. Repping for Ghanaians in Britain, I'm back. Charlie, UK's number one rapper. Since Ghana became independent, every March we rave independence. Celebrate some of the names I'm gonna mention. Starting with more, I stayed independent.
And you know, I became friends with all the football players, everyone from SCN to, you know, Quincy Owusu-Abeyi to Junior Gogo. I mean, they're all close friends of mine now, you know what I mean? So it's like I feel like I've done a lot for that community, but I feel like the community has given me a lot. When I was in school, to be African was kind of like a shameful thing. People would watch the adverts on TV, see, you know, these skinny kids with pot bellies running around in red and yellow sand, naked, and assume that that was Africa, you know what I mean? So when I'm coming in school, the West Indian kids used to spread the word about, you know, make funny names and, you know, obviously Africans do things differently. It was kind of still alien. And I was one of the first rappers to actually come through and say, look, I represent for Britain, I represent for Ghana. This is my heritage, this was what I'm about, and I'm proud of it. And I showed people, you know, and I started highlighting people. I said, look, you lot are skirting like nobody's Ghanaian. You know, you got June Sarpong, she's Ghanaian. Kwame Kwarteng's Ghanaian, Dizzy Rascal's Ghanaian, Reggie Yates is Ghanaian. And then everybody, a lot of the Ghanaian people started standing up and being like, whoa, we got something to be proud of, man. We're actually a powerful nation. Kofi Annan is flipping Ghanaian, you know what I mean? It's like you don't get no bigger, you know what I mean? We're in there.
Well, you're clearly not afraid to tackle the glass ceiling. What's next for you then?
One of my dreams has always been to crack America, and doing this deal with Akon in the States.
So you're signed to his label?
I'm signed to Convict Music in the States. I want to definitely break the States, man. I definitely want to do that. But, you know, I need the UK to be behind me. Right now, I'm not going to lie to you. Like, at this moment in time, I'm very confident about the signature LP. I'm extremely confident. I'm going to do the numbers on this album if I have to drag 100,000 people and drag them to HMV. You know what I mean? I'm going to, or Zavi, but, or anywhere. You know what I mean? I can't go to America, but it's a personal thing. You know what I mean? I need my country behind me. I've worked with Craig David, Jamelia, Ian Brown, the Kaiser Chiefs. I've worked with people who are at that level, but trying to get to that level myself, I'm not going to leave until I get to that level. It's no point.
That was Sway De Safo, and his new album, The Signature LP, is out now.
Now is the time of the show where we hand over to you, we delve through your face back, and we try to work out precisely what Merpaz was saying last week. Merpaz. Rosie, now I was away. I think I've printed out an entire copy for you. This huge screed by somebody who seems to have mistaken Music Weekly for Left of Centre
Conspiracy.
Politics Monthly.
I think, having listened to the show extensively, he came to the opinion that in the interview with Death Cab for Cutie,
this was last week's show,
Chris Wallace says, you know, they talk about being a political band, and he talks about the fact that he actually got on his feet and went door to door on behalf of Obama, because that's how he believed in it. Mentioned this in the trail, and this seems to have spurred some kind of tick in Merpaz. But there's quite a lot of people commenting on the blog this week that hadn't really listened to it. It's all right if you don't like Death Cab for Cutie, but, you know, leave the stupid comments.
Maybe even listen to the show before you start talking about it.
Exactly.
That often seems to benefit, I think. But we eventually got to a few reasonable comments. Trizza was talking about Mike Bones. He says, I like the sound, but his lyrics hurt me. I think music can work with good melodies and bad lyrics, but not the other way around. Surely the goal is to find both. It can be done in electro. Just look at LCD and Metronomy. And then Extraordinary Vamp.
I think Merpaz's point was that many musicians jump on popular political bandwagons without actually knowing anything about the issues at hand, and then go spout uninformed fanboy or girl platitudes in the press, causing more people to possibly join said bandwagon. It's a bit irritating, but then again, this sort of behaviour is no different from the core basis of most political parties. Again, someone else, I think, who didn't listen to the show.
No, but they did do a good job of explaining the point of Merpaz. Anyway, Portishair, good old Portishair, the man who has more submissions for the feature with no name than anybody else. Finished off the thread saying, politics is for the dull. And maybe on that highly facetious note, we'll leave it. Right, moving on to said section with no name. Has it been named in my absence, Rosie?
No, I like to call it the unnamed feature.
The unnamed feature. Moving on to the unnamed feature, and it's you up this week, Rosie, isn't it?
Yes.
And you are talking about an acronym, which I always get wrong, so maybe you should explain it.
I want to talk about UNPOC.
It's alright, cause I'm Nicaragua. I got friends and they wouldn't like it. They're not wearing any makeup now. I
wasn't even Lady Rosie Revolutionary. She's not wearing any makeup now.
UMPOC are the musical project of Tom Beauchamp, a musician at the centre of Fife's burgeoning Fence Collective, who emerged in 2003. The debut album, The Fifth Column, was a collection of prog folkish songs to get totally lost in, inspired by such things as the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, and recorded and mastered in such a way that it sounds like a newly unearthed 70s masterpiece playing on a scratchy 45. Beauchamp himself was one of those musicians who happens about their masterpiece almost by accident. At the time, he was a 25-year-old student simultaneously attending computer science classes. That bleary, earthy, improvised sound could be down to what Beauchamp once described in an interview as the can-do attitude of the Fence Collective. "It's all about getting up there and taking chances," he said. "You can fail and still be a success. If you just bought your first guitar and wanted to sound like you too, you'd never sing anything. With Fence, none of it precludes you from starting your own music." The initials UMPOC were described by Tom as standing for "usual names providing for our cause," but it's also got a traditional 19th century seafaring meaning, unable to navigate, probably on course. In fact, if you go to umpoc.com and click on the button "What does UMPOC mean today?", you'll get your daily explanation, such as "Don't tell anyone, but today it means unusually nervous performers, of course." And it was his state of mind which fans were left to guess at. UMPOC never really made it big and never recorded another studio album. The likes of James Yorkson and King Creosote went on to be relatively more successful than their Fence Collective compadre. And Fifth Column, UMPOC's sole album, sounds like a cross between the Beta Band and past experimentalists like Captain Beefheart or Pop Supremos, the Beach Boys. The short-lived beauty of the truly terrific UMPOC was reignited last year when Domino Records, to whom they were signed, provided the soundtrack to the film Hallam Foe. "Here on My Own" from Fifth Column was used in both the film and the trailer, prompting new fans to seek out this peculiar-sounding UMPOC, and old fans to remember what could have been had Beauchamp ever made another album beyond the timelessly excellent Fifth Column.
Okay, that was Rosie Swash on UNPOC. Thanks for that, Rosie. Coming up next week, we have this.
"It's just a rumour that was spread around town. Somebody said that someone got filled in for saying that people get killed in the result of the shipbuilding."
Robert Wyatt. Rosie went all the way to his Lincolnshire hideout to interview him this week, so we'll have a good chatto with him. Plus, young folky Emmy the Great will be on the pod, so that's it. Do join us next Friday. Until then, thank you very much, Rosie Swash.
You're very welcome.
And I've been Paul McInnes. Goodbye.